You are recording.
Frivolous.
I've got it written down.
I had it on one of the cases with quotes.
I've got it underlined with an exclamation. All right, we're back in open session and recording. Still discussing case 21-123. And the first thing I'm going to do is withdraw my motion that we had tabled.
Okay, so now we're clean slate.
Clean slate, you're leading the discussion.
All right, so I'm going to have two motions here. My first one, I'm going to make a motion to, after reading through and looking at this and having major concerns with this case, to remand this case to an informal.
Second.
A motion on the floor and a second to take case 21-123 to an informal. Any further discussion? Seeing none, it's the roll call.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Hovey?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Resen, aye. Motion carries. All right, so my second motion, I would like to open, or direct staff to open a case. I think that's what it'd be, right? Or is it a motion? Just to direct staff to open a case regarding competency and fitness to practice. And in that case, under statute ARS 322234B, I would like to order a evaluation, mental, physical, and medical evaluation. To be performed by board-approved doctors licensed in those fields. We need the doctor's names within 10 days. I think, is that enough right now?
No, continue on those things.
I'm all trying to think of what else.
It would be, so what I heard and maybe you said, Dr. Wright, I apologize.
Yeah.
Is that he needs to notify us of the professionals within 10 days for board approval. Upon getting board approval of those professionals.
Oh, to schedule the, or to let us know when the appointment is scheduled within an additional 10 days? We decide.
Whatever you think is reasonable.
Yeah, so they'll get 10 days to actually schedule it and then letting us know when it's scheduled for.
And to be scheduled though,
within
60 days?
I would like that. I mean, unfortunately, I think we're going to be limited by what the doctor says, but I would, if it's more than 60 days, it needs to be coming back to us immediately.
I think we'd say 60 days, and then if it can't be, the onus is on him to tell us why.
Well, yeah, exactly. So he's come back, if it's not within 60 days, he needs to come back and let us know. Okay. But
I know that may not be feasible to have shorter time.
From specialists, it won't be.
Yeah, so certain ones are going 6-8 months out for certain things right now. It's crazy. So yeah, if he can't get an appointment within 60 days, we need a viable reason as to why and what a viable alternative would be.
May I ask for some clarification? Are you contemplating two professionals, a medical and psychiatric?
They need to be licensed in those fields. So as long as they're practicing in like a psychiatrist, mental field, medical, and physical, they can all be one person. I don't really care as long as they're actually licensed to practice in those fields.
I'm sorry. I think you're going to be more likely to find someone who's more on the psychological, psychiatric side and then
a neurologist
or someone.
So up to three individuals like this.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor. And the chair was waiting on a
second.
Thank you.
This is the interim order.
Any further?
Thank you.
Yes. Any further discussion? So this is opening the case and the interim order in the case. Let's do a roll call.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Hovey?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Ed is an aye, the motion carries.
All right, so we wanted to move current case to info, open new case. I will finish up 21-123. Next up, 21-135. This injury is a summary.
Case 21-135, the defendant, Amelia Roberts, Rakanescu, and the respondent is Terry Silverman, DBM. On March 19th, 2021, Nina, a 7-year-old female German shepherd, was presented to Apollo Newark Animal Hospital for evaluation of the eyes. The dog was examined. Corneal stain was used to verify the absence of a corneal ulcer or lesion. Dexamethasone ophthalmic drops were recommended and declined by the pet owner. On April 13th, 2021, complaining upon a request of the eye drops, the request was declined as the dog's eyes would need to be reevaluated prior to dispensing medication. The respondent is responsible for caring for the premise. And this case was brought to you and did not, straight to you, and did not go from the investigator committee.
So we have the new acronym, STB.
State to Board.
State to Board. All right, and head, so there is no respondent, no complaint, no monitoring. And Ms. Frost, you are the lead.
Yes, thank you. So in this case, starting with a complaint, I was a little bit confused by it since, you know, it was almost a month after the fact that this prescription was now being requested. And so then going to the submission by the doctor. So this is the permanent license holder, the veterinarian who was originally saw, or the only veterinarian that saw this patient, is no longer at that practice. I did want to clarify for Dr. Silverman, for the record, it seems that there was some disdain for the fact that the board is reviewing this case, and I think it's important to say that we review every complaint. So it's not one that we can simply throw out just by reviewing the information that was submitted. And again, it's not to waste taxpayer resources or time. However, reviewing the records, it was fascinating to me that there had been an appointment created previously in November prior to the March visit, and had been canceled. And I couldn't tell if the dog had been previously diagnosed with canis, so that's why the appointment was made. He said that the owner suspected canis. And it's something common in German, so I'm guessing a responsible owner, and she stated she has 3 German shepherds, it actually communicates in the practice log. So reviewing the case, though, I mean, even the handout that the education that was provided, not only to the husband, but also to the wife, states that canis can change and there can be flare-ups. And so in a period of time where the pet wasn't medicated or treated, of course it would be reasonable to recheck the pet. Their documentation looked very sound when it came to quoting what the visit would cost, and with the stain that was done, which again seems medically appropriate for what they diagnosed. I am super confused because, I mean, to me, what they quoted and what they charged seemed incredibly reasonable beyond, you know, especially what they did. So I'm not really sure where the beef was, but I would say that to me, I agree with the investigative committee, I would dismiss with no violation. I just think somebody just upset that
Second.
A motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 21-135. Any further discussion? I would add, Ms. Frost, I'm glad you called out Dr. Schultman's language in his response. I don't think it was appropriate, what he wrote. Thank you for pointing that out. And this is one where I did use my infamous F word, frivolous, underlined with an exclamation point on this one. Any other discussion? Motion on floor is to dismiss. All in favor?
Aye.
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 That motion passes. Next up, we have the two-pack, 2231 and 2232. Are these summaries the same, Chrissy?
Except for the piece about the responsible veterinarian, they're essentially the same, they're just a little bit more for Dr. Brethauer. So these are the two cases that the board opened up last month. So 2231, the complaint is Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The respondent is Jared Brethauer, DVM. At the September 15th, 2021, the board meeting, the board voted to open an investigation with respect to the respondent after reviewing case 21-98 regarding Dino Herrera Zaragoza, DVM. On February 10th, 2021, the tipsy, a 9-month-old cattle dog mix was presented to Dr. Simpson due to declining condition. Due to the dog's temperament, he was muzzled for the exam. The dog remained muzzled while the findings were discussed with the pet owner. During this time, the dog collapsed. CPR efforts were initiated, but were not successful, therefore they were discontinued. A necropsy was performed and it was suspected that the dog had aspirated. The respondent was not the responsible veterinarian for the premises at the time of the incident. However, he was responsible for creating the new muzzle protocol after the incident occurred. And now case 2232, Dr. Simpson. The summary is the same. And these matters were brought directly to you. Did that go on the investigative
review? Okay, so we have pet owners, do you want to try and call them the places they didn't want to?
They really weren't interested. But okay.
Then let's not disturb them. We are the complainants, so we are here. Mr. Stoll, monitoring?
I do have a statement from Dr. Simpson.
Okay.
Thank you. Neither of the Dr. Brethauer nor Dr. Simpson could be here today, but Dr. Simpson would have read this statement had he been able to make it here today. Statement is as follows. The tragic loss of life of Tipsy, a young dog, still in his puppy days, was deeply troubling and concerning for all of us. My heartfelt condolences and deep sadness at his loss are likely little consolation to Ms. Braun and Mr. Gangler, but I offer them just the same. I'm thankful that we were able to obtain a necropsy from a third party, but was devastated by the findings that Tipsy's loss of life was due to his having aspirated stomach contents when he vomited or regurgitated. It is my suspicion that this was due to having a muzzle on at the time of the event. As we awaited necropsy results, we already began discussions at Blue Pearl as to what could have been done differently and how to minimize the chances of such a tragedy ever happening again. Following that discussion, the management purchased a different set, different style of muzzle, a cage muzzle that, though less protective to the staff, is less restrictive of the mouth and would likely decrease significantly the risk of an aspiration event from occurring under the circumstances in which Tipsy had his aspiration event. Training was immediately undertaken with the staff, both to increase recognition of vomiting, regurgitation, and the proper steps to take if and when this were to occur. Training included how to use the new cage-style muzzles. We again offer our condolences to the owners for the loss of Tipsy. While we have no ability to lessen their loss, it is our hope that our efforts to ensure that, to the degree possible, such an event can be prevented in the future with some will be of some comfort to the owners. Thank you. And that, again, is from Dr. Simpson.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Frost, you are the lead on both these.
Case 2231, Dr. Brethauer. So she was not responsible veterinarian at the time. I think it's kind of challenging in these situations where responsible veterinarians are changing often because it seems to be that they're in, you know, limbo. There's one veterinarian that had departed, another one that was coming in on situation. I find it interesting that the statement was that this particular organization, a very large organization, had no standards when it came to muzzles. And so where I'm glad they have something, it's too little too late for this particular patient. But in this case, this veterinarian was not the responsible veterinarian and did not see this patient. So in this case, I would make a motion to dismiss the violation.
Second. A motion on the floor and a second to dismiss 2231. Is there any further discussion?
Comment I would make is I'm surprised they put a policy in place regarding muzzles that didn't include taking it off under after completion of the procedure that you're doing. Like the whole point of this case was that you left this muzzle on for the length of the dog's visit rather than taking it off when you were done with your diagnostics, and they didn't even include that in their policy. Doesn't change my recommendation, but I just feel like that's...
I thought he did put that in.
I see.
No, the policy was interesting because it talked more about fitting the basket muzzles, which as the statement that was just read says, it's actually less protective for the team. So that, it seems a little bit counterproductive in the sense that, sure, the dog could vomit and you could leave this muzzle on in theory, right? But it's really not doing anything for the reason that the muzzle was on in the first place. So I don't know. It's a fascinating thing. Again, Their policies are going to be their policies. I don't know that we're going to be able to change that.
I just think that leaving a muzzle on any dog increases the risk when there's no need for it. Now, if there's a need for it, you're still working on the dog, that's a totally different situation. Or if you can't get a dog safely and you're waiting for the owner to arrive, that's a different situation. But there's nothing that documents that. That would be my only, and I only make it as a comment just because I think the policy could be better, but it doesn't change what we're voting on in this case. Because this doctor wasn't the responsible.
So the only thing I wrote in my notes is I had all that, and he's not the responsible vet, and he did come up with some protocols that I guess I didn't read carefully enough. I'll go back and read those again. So I had as an option to dismiss. He still gets a letter of concern that he can share with Blue Pearl leadership. That would state, okay, what you just said, that, okay, he came up with a protocol, still missing the key part of the protocol, take it off. And also maybe address that, what Ms. Frost talked about, these rotating responsible veterinarians. Because I think we see that, I don't know, they come across as often, it comes as a case, in a case form in front of us. But we certainly see it on the inspection forms we see, that these that some of these businesses, they are do have a pretty high turnover of responsible veterinarians. And what do you do in a case like this? What about the one that was there? When did it happen? And how do you tie them to this case?
I don't know if I would do the letter of concern. I think they should learn from this case, and if they listen to the transcript, they'll hear kind of what we talked about. But I don't feel we should hold a veterinarian accountable. I don't want to be making their policies, like, because then it sounds like I'm authorizing their policies, and I'm not. I just think that there's more that could be included in there for the safety of the animals. But I think, you know, if they take this seriously and they're listening to this and getting the information, then I don't see a reason for a letter of concern. He wasn't the responsible vet, and he has taken action, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think that, like, for me, and I think that what Dr. James just said, I made a note that why did this event happen on the 9th, but a practice manager didn't inform the interim medical director until the 22nd. I find that disturbing. Again, that's an internal practice. That there could have been better communication, right, up front, and maybe some more support for the owners and maybe the attending doctor, and just to show transparency. But again, I don't know that there's anything we're going to be able to change or, you know, spur there, other than hopefully somebody listens to this, you know.
All right, any further discussion?
Just to clarify, wasn't the communication to in essence, corporate done on March the 1st, and the policy came about on March the 22nd, and the respondent came back with the policy on the 22nd? Am I misreading this?
So I'm talking about the event happened early February,
right,
and this particular doctor found out about it on the 22nd. This went to March 1st, and then, yeah, so it was, yeah, there was a period of time that passed. But I don't know, there was just a long timeline of, there was concerns, right? And if that was January, that was before national event happened, but it wasn't, I don't know what the medical concerns were, because that was just vaguely documented.
All right, so I understand, kind of swayed me a little bit, that yes, they can listen to the audio, and that could take the place of a letter of concern. So just cross my fingers, knock on wood, listen to the audio. Any further discussion? The motion on the floor is to dismiss. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes. Next up is 2232.
Okay, so obviously the same summary in this case. However, Dr. Simpson was the attending doctor at the time of the event, and reading the new proxy, which is also confirmed in Dr. Simpson's statement, along with the addendum on the culture that came back, it doesn't seem that anybody is disputing that the aspiration would point to the muzzle being on at the time the dog, you know, attempted to vomit. And it is, I agree with Dr. Simpson's statement, it's a horrible, tragic loss of life that seems to have been incredibly avoidable. And, you know, for that reason, I would make a motion to find a violation. Not sure if I have it documented correctly, so if somebody could screen this for me, but I would make a motion to find ARS 3222-3211, malpractice, gross incompetence, or gross negligence in the practice of veterinary medicine, as it relates to R311-501, professionally acceptable procedures, and then that would be my motion.
Second.
A motion for a second. Any further discussion?
So my concern in this case is, and reading through it, it was unclear if Dr. Simpson was aware that the muzzle was on the entire time. Like, it sounded like he said in one of the statements that I went back and talked to them and then realized that this muzzle had been on the whole time. I mean, ultimately, yes, it's his responsibility to know that, but at the same time, I feel like if that had kind of been their standard practice and he wasn't aware that the dog was still having a muzzle on, are we holding him accountable to something he wasn't even aware of? Like, he didn't instruct them to leave the muzzle on. He didn't, you know, at least not that I can tell. So I don't know, that was my only reason I was leaning more towards
maybe a letter of concern than a violation, only because I'm not so sure that he knew that this mobile had been on while he was talking to this owner. And once the dog did actually have complications, that what happened was right, was correct.
Yeah, I mean, I would disagree. I think that it's the veterinarian's responsibility that the patients are cared for in the way that's medically appropriate, regardless of a practice's quote unquote protocols. I think it's a conversation we've had in many cases before, where, well, they were going to be doing this and they were going to be doing that. But again, it always comes back to the veterinarian and being aware of what's going on with your patient, I think matters. And in this case, somebody is responsible, and the attending veterinarian is responsible. Now, the way I read it, and maybe that's the difference here, is that I read it that, you know, this muzzle was left on while he was speaking to the clients, and so again, I read it that he understood that. Whether it was his decision or not, ultimately it was. Again, that's just how I read it and how I'm looking at the information in front of us.
No, I mean, it's...
But again, yeah.
A malpractice violation is a little hard for me, because was this like an intentional thing? Was it... I mean, it seems a little rough.
I mean, if you unintentionally put a muzzle on?
Well, no, but I mean, the dog was lunging as it came in and trying to bite people as it came in. So, I mean, if you take that muzzle off and it's not ready to leave, it may bite someone at that point. So... I mean, I think there was evaluation, or there's a consideration for the actual muzzle being left on, but I mean, is it truly malpractice to say, hey, this dog was trying to bite my staff and cause damage to my staff, which is definitely not acceptable, and balancing that with when do you take a muzzle off after an exam while you're still talking to the client while that pet is still with your staff?
Well, and that's what you don't have that information.
Yeah, malpractice is just, it seems a little...
Was the dog still being aggressive and trying to attack people? I don't know. Like, we don't have that information. So
yeah, but still, as opposed to, well, the dog showed that already. Once they show it, I'm not trusting them, personally.
Well,
I'm not going to be like, well, you tried to bite me 10 minutes ago, but you haven't done it now with the muzzle's on, so let's take the muzzle off and see what happens.
My thing
so
is that if they try to bite while you're working on them, you put a muzzle on and then you take it off. Most dogs don't just attack randomly.
This one says he was lunging when they came in.
That's
yeah.
why I'm like, I don't know if this dog was still behaving that way. That's why I'm like, without that information, I don't know how you can hold somebody accountable for leaving
yeah.
those muzzles on. I do think it's a concern,
yeah.
and I think that they need better protocols and better monitoring of dogs with muzzles on, but...
But malpractice for, because the only test would be taking the muzzle off and seeing if your staff gets bit and being like, oh, well, that sucks. I mean, that's not acceptable
either. You can usually read behavior and take it off.
If it's in a cage,
well, no, yeah, but no.
If you put it in a crate or a kennel or something.
But how are you going to get it
out of
there?
Why does it need the muzzle?
But how are you going to get it out of there when it starts lunging at you when it's in the kennel?
Well, next
year. Oh, yeah, so. I mean, there are options. And like I said, I think there are concerns here, but full on malpractice, that's a little heavy handed for me. I mean, I'm definitely concerned, but was this rising to the level of malpractice? That dog was attacking unprovoked. That's viciousness to me. And viciousness is a whole other ballgame. I'm not taking a muzzle off.
Between this trip and the first trip, because the first trip it didn't.
Oh, yeah,
it didn't have a muzzle on it.
Yeah. Every trip's a
problem.
Different.
And the first trip it was lowering its head every time another dog barked. So what happened?
I mean, animals
just upset they brought it back.
Well, animals respond different with different situations. I mean, same thing with me is, I mean, I wake up some days and I'm happy. Some days you wake up and you don't feel like great. So, I mean, every day is going to be different. That's not a variable that we need to consider, I don't think. The dog showed aggressiveness that day. That dog, and there's a difference between aggressiveness and viciousness. I mean, if a dog's trying to bite and lunge unprovoked, that's vicious, flat out. And I'm not putting my staff at risk. That dog's getting a muzzle, and that dog's getting a muzzle coming in, leaving my hospital. Now, like I said, should it be monitored a little bit different? Yeah, that's where my concern is. But I'm not going to be like, well, this dog tried to attack my staff 10 minutes ago. It hasn't done much when a muzzle's on. Let's take the muzzle off and see if someone dies. No. That's not acceptable to me. I had a 5-month-old puppy rip my neck open, and I had to go get emergency surgery to stitch that closed. So I don't trust
five
anything.
5-month-old, how big was it?
It was about a 25-pound black lab. Like I said, so I don't trust animals. I've been bit enough. I have friends that have been bit on their arms and can't do surgery because they're partially paralyzed in their hands now. I'm not trusting a vicious animal. My job is not to put my life and my livelihood at risk for a pet. That's not my job. My job is to help. So muzzling this dog as it comes in is acceptable to me. Keeping the muzzle on is acceptable. It's the monitoring that I'm concerned about. And that's not malpractice to me. There's a concern here, but malpractice is telling me like almost there's an intentional method to killing this dog with a muzzle, and that's malpractice is too heavy-handed for me.
Well, and he does say in his statement, this is where I was coming from, that I'm not sure he knew the muzzle was on. It was subsequently when writing my medical record, I saw the description from the staff member that indicated he was muzzled at the time of collapse, so clearly he didn't know that, and that she had waited for her fellow staff member to get there before removing the muzzle. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, be it right or wrong, he didn't know that that had gone on. Yeah. But anyway.
But I mean, yeah, no, I mean, I think
no
there's
excuse for the law, is that the phrase?
But there's concerns. But again, the only other option was taking this muzzle off and potentially getting a staff member bit, which is a whole other ball game.
You're in the practice of veterinary medicine. You always have a risk.
That's not my job. My job is not to take that.
But you always have.
But that's not my job. My job is nowhere in my job description is to get bit.
Okay. So we can always vote no.
Yeah.
And then move on.
Mr. Chairman, can I get a clarification on the actual motion? Ms. Frost, was it to find a violation of 2232.11 as it relates to malpractice, as well as a violation of 12 as it relates to 501?
I did not say 12.
Okay, so it's just a violation of 2232.11.
Yes.
Thank you.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm sorry.
Okay, so I'll
so we had the motion. We had a second.
We got a motion and a second. And if we don't like that one, we should vote it down. And my only issue is while this discussion's been going on, I'm looking. I mean, I agree. I think that's a little heavy-handed, but what else?
Yeah,
I have a hard time finding something else, so.
And I don't know that this is, may require legal interpretation. I heard comments that malpractice requires intent, and I'm not an attorney, but I'm not sure that's the case.
I would ask you to take a look at the definition of malpractice in your statute. It means treatment in a manner contrary to accepted practices and with injurious results. That's the definition of malpractice.
I mean, you're intending not to follow the procedures. It's kind of what it is. It's like malpractice is not you give like an aspirin, you have an adverse reaction, and you die. That's kind of what malpractice has been bastardized and turned into. That's not actually what malpractice is. So, like I said, there is an intent to there where you're not following the procedures that are acceptable. That's how I've always looked at malpractice, because that's a malpractice is a you're practicing wrong.
But are you aware that you're practicing wrongly and are doing so with an intent?
Well, you're not following procedures is kind of where I'm at. You should know those procedures.
I don't know the intent and the intent.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
just the word mall means it's not.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I can't grasp that one for me on this case personally.
Okay, so again, motion on the floor is to find the violation. And we should do a roll call.
Right. Ms. Krieger?
Nay.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Nay.
Mr. Lowy?
Nay.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright is a nay. The motion fails.
Well, I would make a motion that in this case we send a letter of concern to Dr. Simpson regarding ensuring that he's aware of what's going on with his patients and their status of being muzzled, that they're being monitored regularly while being muzzled, and that, maybe I'll just leave it at that.
So I'll second that.
Motion on the floor and a second to issue a letter of concern. Is there any further discussion?
I just don't think it's enough. I think that something was done that caused the death of this dog. It was done at the facility under the care of that veterinarian, and it's just not enough. And we always say, well, if there was a necropsy, then that would give us the answer, but we just don't know what happened, and now we have one, and we're like, oh, well, it happens.
Well, again, it's
this doesn't happen, and it's not okay.
There is a death, there's a difference between accident and stuff that just kind of happens, unfortunately, and
There can be an accident. We still take responsibility for it. You absolutely have to.
Well, yeah, there's responsibility, but again, there's gradations of where is that, what does that qualify in?
And I go back to, I cannot right now, with the information we have, unless we want to go informal, say that this muzzle was improperly used. If that dog was still aggressively attacking staff, they had to leave that muzzle on, and this is the outcome. They can't control that. That's not within their control. I don't know that that's what happened. I don't believe that that's what happened. But that's why I'm like, to me, this is, the dog wasn't being monitored. The dog, it's just different. I mean, I can't say that they did that wrong and that it's their fault that this happened, because that dog might have been lunging at everybody and that muzzle might have needed to stay on, and that just sucks.
Yeah. But again, was the aspiration noted? By anyone, and if it wasn't, why not?
Well, you don't know about aspiration until after the fact, unfortunately. So you can't really call that until, that could be a whole lot of different things that's causing that. So, like I said, we do have in there that there was no food or anything seen in the mouth. I think when they intubated, they remember seeing that. So, like I said, I agree that, like I said, this was an unfortunate situation there, but again, I don't. This is a culmination of issues that I'm concerned about, but it is more the monitoring of the dog. And if we would have caught this a little bit quicker, would that have been an issue? Or once the dog already collapsed, it's already too late. So, I mean, would another 45 seconds been enough to take that muzzle off and let that dog cough out that food as opposed to, or whatever we aspirated? And we just don't know that, but that's where the monitoring portion comes in. It's not a wrong thing, it's just an accident, but could the accident have been mitigated better? That's kind of where I'm at.
So, I'm gonna not go where I'm thinking about a past case where there was an accident monitoring involved, and not talk about that. I'm kind of stuck between. I wrote down three options on my notes, and I didn't circle any of them. I've got CA, assuming we're going to find a violation. I got informal, and I've got LOC. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm scratching LOC off. Ms. Frost convinced me.
So why don't
we? I'm leaning toward informal to answer that question, but I think the malpractice is a little heavy-handed.
Why don't we go
with
LOC? Because I like your comments. But
Any further discussion? Motion on the floor is to issue a letter of concern. Roll call.
Ms. Krieger.
Aye.
Ms. Frost.
No.
Dr. James.
Aye.
Mr. Lowy.
Nay.
Ms. Solomon.
Nay.
And Dr. Wright is an aye. That's 6-6, isn't it? Mm-hmm. 3-3, I should say.
So it doesn't pass.
So that's a failure if it's tied.
If it's tied, it's a failure, yeah.
The chairman breaks the tie.
How about a motion to refer to informal?
I'll second that.
I'm game. Ms. Frost, you're the lead. Hello?
Well,
hello.
I'm
sorry.
He made
the
motion.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just going to give her the opportunity to second. Maybe she was making the motion while she was on mute.
They're both
on
mute.
Yeah, I already seconded. Now you can discuss it.
Yeah.
I already did.
Oh, did you second it? Yeah. No, I was thinking about it. I understand what the damn thing the perspective of that. I just couldn't find something else that I felt that fit this situation.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to say, well, there was somebody else responsible, and that's the person we hold responsible. But in the way that our statutes are written, it's the veterinarian that's responsible. So I know, that's what I got. And if a veterinarian doesn't want to be responsible, they don't believe in their team, their business, or the procedures, whatever, they have the right to not work for them. So I don't know, I that's still the direction, you know, that I would go in this case. I think it's a crappy case. It is a really crappy case, but it is what happened, so.
All right, motion on the floor is to move to the informal. Any further discussion? Roll call.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Lodi?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Eisenhide, motion carries.
All right, 2232 moves to an informal, and that finishes the orders.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, with respect to the remand of the informal, did you want to include the general violations that you referenced in your informal interview letter? Because I don't believe that the information that you had before you identified the other violations.
That would be probably a very nice notice for the respondent.
Back to that same.
Well, yeah, I guess I would use that the one we voted down.
Yeah. That's what's sort of back to the same.
We voted it down.
Without practice.
Yeah.
Did you also want to maybe include as a possible violation 12 as it relates to 5.11?
That's what I was wondering, is 12, because that's more of that. But I was like, is that more of an ethics thing? But I mean, ethics, what does that define as? But I think ethics, yeah.
And it's,
okay. Again, this is just, you're just including.
Just noticing, yeah. Yeah, I would like to do 12.
12?
Yeah.
11 and 12, or just 12?
No, I mean, because you can go 11 too, yeah. Because if something comes up there, we're like, oh, wow, there was other issues there. And that, yeah, I think that's fine.
And 11 includes gross negligence also, not just, you know, malpractice.
Yeah, I think that's probably what's going to work.
So 2232, 11, and 12.
As it relates to 501.
As it relates to 501.
A1.
We are finished with that one now.
Can we get a couple of questions for that?
Yes.
Council is requesting a quick motion.
Yes.
So moved.
We did vote, didn't we? Second.
We already voted on the formal. We need to add that language.
Yeah.
A motion for a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hey, motion passes. All right.
Short break.
Short break. Okay. Since running away.